Hey now, welcome to the jungle. What's going on? A very good Thursday to you. I'm Jim Rome. I'm locked. I'm loaded. I feel awesome. A tremendous, tremendous day to you. All right, full show. Let's get it going. Telephone number is toll free. You know this. Take advantage of it. Toll free in the U.S., toll free in Canada, wherever you can hear me. Hit me up right now, 1-800-636-8686. Once again, 1-800-636-8686. You can follow me on Twitter at Jim Rome. You can email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. Quicken Loan Studios, that's where I reside. Quicken Loans apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently. Let me tell you about the program. I'm fired up. In studio, coming up next segment, UFC bantamweight fighter, the author of a brand new book, Cody Garbrandt. He will join me in studio. It's a great book. And that's coming up in about 15 minutes. In fact, his guy, Uriah Faber, just did a drive-by. Uriah was in the house, and then he was out of the house. So we're talking MMA, and Cody Garbrandt joins me in studio 15 minutes out. Next hour, head football coach at Oklahoma State, Mike Gundy, hour number three. A senior writer for SB Nation, Paul Flannery, joins us. So lots of NBA to talk about. NHL playoffs. You got a big Game 7 tonight. Smashville and Winnipeg. You know I am all over that. It is smack-off season. You want to hit me up? I will tell you, yesterday I made a road trip down to San Diego. Saw my pals at San Diego. We're on the FM in San Diego. It was good to get back to my stomping grounds. Spent the afternoon down there. Had a great, great time. All right, with that said, let me start with some NBA. I do not root. You know this. It's one of the rules of this show. I am paid not to root. You got that? Not only do I not root, they pay me not to root. So let me be honest. I'm going to admit that I was rooting. I was rooting for Philadelphia to win last night because I want to keep that series going. Philly, Boston, not just a good series, and it was that, but it was more than that. It was a war of petty, and it was awesome. I mean, before that game got tipped off, I do have to admit, I had a bad feeling for Philly. Not because the game was in Boston. Not because the Celtics have been much better at home than on the road in the playoffs. And not because I knew the Celtics would come out with that edge, with that nasty. But because of a photo that I saw before the game. Check this out. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, you'll see it. What was in that photo? The photo I'm talking about, Drew Bledsoe and Terry Rozier, together, at last, the culmination of a series worth of memes. First, it was Terry Rozier showing up at the Garden in a Bledsoe jersey. Then, it was Bledsoe taking to Instagram in a scary T, or scary Terry T. And now these guys are side by side. I mean, side by side and, like, unstoppable. You see the two of those cats together? It's like Batman and Superman. You name me a more iconic duo. I'm going to wait a little longer. It's ionic.
Ionic.
That's when I knew Philadelphia was finished. At that point, if you had told me the final score was going to be 114 to 112, I would have said it's a Celtic win and a Celtic series. Because if Drew Bledsoe comes into your house and sits courtside, you're in trouble. And if he comes into your house and sits courtside in an autographed Terry Rozier jersey, then it's over. Except Philly didn't come out and roll over. These guys hung in. They battled. They fought. It was a game with 21 lead changes. And just when it looked like it might be slipping away from Philly in the third quarter, Joel Embiid turned in a monster quarter. But then came the fourth, and that's when the pressure ramps up. And when the pressure gets higher, the Celtics always get better. There was Al Horford on an alley-oop to get Boston within two.
Wait any time, just shot it back up over his head.
Tatum up top. Oh, my goodness! Al Horford!
Al Horford, 10 years in, and this dude is still dropping out of the rafters. I didn't know he had that in him, but he did. And then you've got Marcus Smart tying it at 109 and then making the play at the other end that led to a Philly turnover that led to this.
Terry Rozier drawing some traffic. Who's going to take the big shot? Tatum. And Tatum scores! Boston on top!
Even then, Philadelphia still had a chance. Down two. They get the ball into Embiid in the post with Aaron Baines on him. And then this happened.
Ben looking. He's got to get it in. He does the Covington. Now they go to Embiid. Embiid against Baines. Quick drive. Embiid against Baines. Shoots it. No good. Embiid with a rebound 12 seconds ago. Rozier takes it away. It's out of bounds, and Boston is going to get the ball. Terry Rozier knocked it away from Embiid. Embiid falls out of bounds. The Sixers' biggest player had two cracks at it down low and could not score it. And then Rozier came and knocked it away. And the Boston Celtics, with 10.2 to go, with a two-point lead, will have the ball.
That was clutch. That was so clutch. So brass. So Boston. When asked about that later on, Rozier was just Rozier about it. Quote, just a championship play, that's all. Not too much to say about it. End quote. It's cold-blooded. But the guy's right. That was a championship play, and there really isn't a hell of a lot to say about it. Boston makes plays like that. Even guys who you don't expect to make plays like that for Boston make plays like that. I mean, yeah, I'd expect Kyrie or Gordon or Horford to make plays like that. But at the start of the season, would you really have expected Terry Rozier to be making a clutch strip in the final seconds of an elimination game? I mean, yeah, Celtic honks will tell you they always believed in Marcus Smart. But did you really believe that that guy would be such a force and a savage who'd be making winning plays on both ends of the floor to close out Philly? Even when Smart messed up by missing a foul shot that he intended to make and making the foul shot he intended to miss, this guy still came up with the steal to ice the game. So, a 4-1 series. A 4-1 series that felt pretty close, and then not close at all. But the difference was Boston executed in pressure, and Philadelphia did not. Boston does not blink. They don't cave. They just execute, and now they advance. Even though most left them for dead midseason, they're right back to where they were a year ago. And they're there without two huge pieces. It's a tribute to the guys they do have. It's a tribute to their coach, Brad Stevens, who might be the best basketball coach on the planet right now. So, they move on, they advance, and we're right back as to where we were a year ago, Cavs and Celtics, and these two teams, frankly, couldn't be more different than they were then, but they're both back. And then the big question, the major question, what do you do about LeBron? What can the Celtics do about LeBron? What can anybody do about LeBron? At this point, we will get into that a little bit later on. In the meantime, who do you have? Who do you like in the East? How many games? How do you think that's going to go? Call your shot before it goes down. Don't come in here after the fact with, you know, Rome, I knew it. I knew it. I tried to get through, but I couldn't. You can. Get through right now. And here come the emails. Dear Rome, Drew Bledsoe. Who the hell is that? Signed Ichiro. Tyler in Charlotte. I will get to that. Safe to assume that if Ichiro doesn't know who Tom Brady is, he does not know who Drew Bledsoe is. Is there anybody on the planet not named Ichiro who doesn't know who Tom Brady is? I mean, sports or non-sports related. Ichiro literally is like Tom Brady. Yeah, there's some dude here named Tom Brady who wants to watch me stretch. True story. I have that later on. This email reads, Dear Philly, trust the experience. Regards, the Boston Celtics. Trust Scott in the Bay. War of the Warriors taking care of the Rockets in five. Let's talk about that matchup, too. Golden State and Houston. Experience was definitely a difference last night. I mean, Philadelphia looked like they were here, right? At first, they looked like they were way ahead of schedule. Then it looked like they had arrived. Then it looked like they were the team to beat in the East. And then they got exposed. They're not ready yet. There is a process. And part of that process is experience. Hard to act like you've been there before when you have not been there before. And one more email. Joel. I'm getting a lot of Joel's emails for some reason. Like, you can't find him, so you think, I'll just send it to you, Rome. Don't you want to be a surrogate dad? Hey, Joel, trust the golf game, buddy.
Trust the process.
You ran your suck hole all year long, only to be the eighth best team in the league. You just lost to a team, missing its two best players, and you proceed to talk, even after you're eliminated, about how you're going to have a fistful of rings. How? You think LeBag is going to leave one crummy city to go to an even worse city? Get a grip. The Celtics are only going to get better next year, and they're going to be the best team in the East for a very long time. Go drop some DMs to Rihanna or Mia or whatever washed-up celebrity that you're trying to hook up with. Clown.
Get a grip.
Harsh. Matt in Poland Springs. Harsh. Hey, Matt, a couple things. Riri, I think, is not washed up yet. And the Sixers are going to be there with LeBron or without LeBron. Yeah, you got over. Tip your hat to Boston. They manned up. They were great. The Sixers are going to be there. The two of these teams both are going to be there, regardless of where LeBron goes, for a long time. This email reads, Dear 76ers, get. Regards the Green Man. Nick in the land of the Norsemen, Celtic honks are coming out. That goes back to yesterday. There was a brawl. A brawl over, hey, look, there's certain things that you fight for. There's certain things, certain universal reasons to go, right? Somebody spits in your face, you go. Somebody insults your race or religion, you go. Somebody insults your significant other, you pretty much go. Somebody tries to cheat in cornhole, you go. You throw.
This is stupid.
She didn't like it. She presided over the entire event. And when they started to throw haymakers, this woman got up on the mic and said, Get. Thanks, Alvy. 1-1000, 2-1000.
Stop it right now.
Get. All right, get. Elsewhere. Western Conference Finals, Eastern Conference Finals, Ichiro, one of the best to ever pick up a bat, has never heard of Tom Brady. Or so he says. Game 7, Smashville, Winnipeg. Man, you eggs want me to lose that so badly. Even though I don't root, there are countless thousands of you rooting against me, just rolling out of the rack full of hate. It's all good. It's all good. Go ahead, at me. I'm not saying don't at me. At me, because I know what's going to happen. Here's something that a small percentage of you probably will or will not appreciate. It depends on which way you go. I've got something for you CrossFitters. I'm actually kind of on your side on this. There was the burpee record that went down yesterday. Except CrossFit Nation's not having it. Not having it. So I will get to that a little bit later on too. The Mets went very Met-like again. Only the Mets could bat out of order. A major league team batting out of order. That story's coming up. All right, so all that still heads. Big day. I've got Mike Gundy next hour. But when we come back, UFC bantamweight, Cody Garbrandt in studio. He's got a great book. Really nice book. And we're going to talk to him about that and his career. That's coming up next in studio. Getting maximum performance out of anything depends on what you put into it. So if you want to achieve max performance at work, you put in the extra effort. When you want max performance from your kids, you put in the time and the tools. And when you want maximum performance from your vehicle, you put in Castrol Edge, the titanium strong motor oil. Modern engines are smaller. They're more powerful. They operate at higher pressures than ever before. So the pressure in the engine means the oil has to be strong, and it has to stay strong to deal with that additional stress. Castrol Edge is formulated with fluid titanium technology, which helps to reduce friction and maximize engine performance. Castrol Edge is 3 times stronger than the leading full synthetic against viscosity breakdown as tested in the Kurt Orban test in the 5W30 Viz grade. Put it in your car today. It's in all of our vehicles. Castrol Edge.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. All right, so we're cruising through a Thursday. Changing up on you right now in studio, I am joined by a UFC fighter. He's a former UFC bantamweight champion. He is 11-1, the number one ranked bantamweight right now, and he's an author. This book is out. It's called The Pact, a UFC champion, a boy with cancer, and their promise to win the ultimate battle. He's going to face TJ Dillashaw, UFC 227, Dillashaw v. Garbrandt 2. It's August 4th in Los Angeles. Cody Garbrandt joins me in studio. Cody, it's great to see you. How are things this morning? What's going on?
Great. We just flew in from New York, so it's good to be on the West Coast. You know, the weather is awesome. It's great to be in here and, you know, start this tour here in L.A.
All right, it's good to have you in here. I want to talk to you about your book, but your guy came in, Uriah Faber, right before. Man, I love him. We go back. I love him. He's been talking you up on this show for many, many years. It was great to see him in the house. What's he meant to you in your career?
He's meant so much to me in my career. I mean, before I even met the guy, I kind of, you know, gravitated towards him in the WEC. You know, he was the poster boy child for the fighting. He could speak well. He could fight well. He did it all. So it's something that I wanted to do. He built a gym, you know, with his dream and turned into my dream, making it out here all the way from a small town in Ohio. And that was it. You know, final destination was the world champion. They turned me into a world champion out there. So I'm forever grateful for him. We fly in from New York. He's texting me the whole time. He's like, I'm going to come down. I'm flying down when you get there. He goes, Rob, our buddy who we stay with here in Orange County, we have mats there. So he's like, we're going to do an hour grind match. I'm like, I just did media all day from like 5 a.m. New York time, flew all the way over here. Favorite flies from Sacramento, just, push me, So he's always wanting to push me. He has a big fight coming up August 4th, and we're going to get this one back. So just always there for me. Great guy.
Cody Garbrandt joining me in studio. So you've got a book out now, and you've done a lot of things in your life. You've got a lot of things to be proud of. It's one thing to put yourself out there athletically. It's another to put yourself out there artistically. And as an author, what's it like to release a book? What's that process been like?
It's been a long process. It's really surreal for me. We went to New York and, like I said, did the media tour there. So that kind of when it hit me when I first had the hard copy in the book and started doing the press tour. And, it was definitely a time in my life, I think, that we needed to get the story out with my story, then meeting Maddox, and then we making the pack and the promise of winning the world championship. Now that part of our journey is over with. I won the world championship. Maddox is in remission now 4 years and beat cancer. So, we're going to go down a different journey, a different path, and still have each other. But I think it was very important at this time to share our story and to share his story, share his battle, what he went through and what we went through together to make it to the top.
Listen, there's releasing a book. Lots of guys have books. And then there's releasing a book like this. For those who don't know, who is Maddox Maple? And how did you first come into contact with Maddox?
Maddox Maple was a five-year-old from my same hometown in Yorksville, Ohio. And my brother actually reached out to me about, I was an amateur fighter at the time. And we fought for ticket sales. So he said, you should, reach out to the family, do a benefit for him. Give your ticket sales to the family. And just show everyone that, the community, to get them rallied around that they don't have to do this battle alone. So I reached out to Mick, which is Maddox's father, on Facebook when he first had his early onset battles with leukemia. And they reached back to me and said, once Maddox is clear to come home and have visitors, we'd love to meet you. I just wanted to get their story and just tell them that we'd like to, help you out on this fight and show you don't have to do this battle alone. And went down there and met him. The story for, told me about their life and what happened. And I was there for a little over an hour, and I left that day kind of just feeling changed, challenged, and renewed. Like, I needed to – what I was at in my life, too, was some dark place. I left college twice. I was about to join the coal mine.
Cody, where were you? Where were you at your point in your life in terms of maturity? Where were you emotionally? What was your life like when you first met Maddox?
Man, I was going down some wrong paths. Like I said, I left college twice, so I had full ride scholarships to colleges, and left that. I just listened to everybody else. Everyone wanted me to, not put my eggs in one basket, get the degree. I wanted to fight. I wanted to fight ever since I was young. That's all I knew and that's all I loved. It was truly my passion. And I was listening to everybody else, but, I left college twice and kind of I was 18 and trying to figure it out, but I was still doing cage fighting, but I wasn't living the right lifestyle to progress in that career. I was going out with my friends and got, caught up with some of the wrong people and, trying to get out of my hometown.
You mentioned the coal mines. How did the coal mines figure into this?
Well, my brother worked in the coal mines. We have a coal mine in our hometown, and that's what a lot of people would go do, and you'd get their certificate, and went to a coal mining class and passed a test, and, had job interviews coming in. I remember sitting down with my mom after the job. She's like, you want to go take this job interview? And I just sat her down. I was like, honestly, Mom, I really don't want to go work in the mine. Trust me, just please believe in me. Like, give me till I'm 25, I'll make this happen. And she was like my supporter, my rock. She's been there since I was young. She put us in wrestling, traveled all over the country with us to these wrestling tournaments, boxed, never missed a fight at my first fight at 14. So she's my rock. And she told me, I support you with whatever you do. Just do it wholeheartedly and do it with passion and just have fun doing it. And that was all I needed, just that little, boost from my mom. And then started to get back on my feet, training, get back in the gym. And that's when I, started reach out to Maddox for my next fight, and was still dabbling in some troubles. Ended up getting into a bar fight, getting stabbed.
I was gonna say you got stabbed in a bar fight. Yeah. What happened?
It was just a kind of, honestly, it's the wrong place, wrong time kind of thing, and just kind of escalated. A couple fights broke out in the bar that spilled out into the gravel parking lot, and there was just bodies getting knocked out. People were just fighting with everybody. I was trying to get back to my car. I was picking up one of my friends, and this guy came out of nowhere, kind of just ran about how bad he was and this and that. I just didn't want no problems. I was in flip-flops for crying out loud and just trying to get out of the start. It was a nice summer day, but it started raining, so everyone kind of came to this one bar, and it was packed, and just the vibe kind of switched after it started raining, and everyone was already wasted and just not a good time. And he came out of nowhere and he ended up stabbing my friend, severing his bicep through his, and so I know that he was out there to really hurt people and stabbing me in my leg. I was able to defend myself and get away. And that was just kind of a wake up call for me, like, wow, I'm doing some wrong stuff. And Max came into my life, shortly after that and kind of just really redirected my faith and focus and my purpose in life. Like, why am I living like this? Why am I have a bigger dream and goal in life and bigger purpose in life than just what I'm doing here. And that's really what, motivated me to keep going forward in my dream.
Cody Garbrandt joining me in studio. He's got a book out, and it's called The Pact, a UFC champion, a boy with cancer, and their promise to win the ultimate battle. I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. You talk about growing up, and you were trying to find yourself, and things were not going so well. You were not running with the right crew. You get stabbed, and then you meet Maddox. So when you first met him, when you first started to interact with him, what did you think about him?
I remember the first day going to his house, meeting the family, the parents, and himself. And I just remember seeing this little kid. I had a sister the same age as him, and he had lost his hair. And
how old was he at that point?
5 years old, five and a half. And his whole world just changed around. He literally, they thought there was a burst appendicitis, or appendix, and so they rushed him to the hospital. And next thing you know, they're getting they get a port put in his chest and getting his first chemotherapy. So, I mean, 24 hours just changed his whole entire life. And it was a few weeks after that whole ordeal, and he came home, and I had seen a kid with a lot of life to live. I just, whatever I saw, I just knew that. I told his parents, like, I know he's going to beat this cancer. I just knew he was going to be a warrior. He's a fighter. And we just made that pact and that bond. And I'd always, I lived in Cleveland. I moved around a lot, but I'd always come see him, visit him when I would come home to my hometown, because I try to stay away from that as much as I can. But I had stud family there and roots. So I would go and visit my family on the weekends and would see him. And then I ended up venturing out to California. So every time I would come back from California, I would come pick him up from school or do anything with him. He'd come to all my fights. He'd walk me down to my fights. And that was something that he looked forward to in his battle. He'd be sick. And that was like, okay, we're fighting. He knows that he gets to walk me down to the cage. And that was something that he enjoyed. He's like, oh, he would always text me. He's so excited about seeing me in the fight week and walking me down. So we've been doing this since, I was an amateur.
So there was an immediate connection. And I want to say, my father had leukemia and died from leukemia. It's like the worst thing ever, except for a child who has it. It's the scariest thing ever. So the two of you come up with a pact. The book is about the pact. What is the pact?
The pact's about 7 months left in chemotherapy. So he's, he's almost towards the tail end of it. And he's doing so well. I mean, just a warrior, just completely, waking up every day and just fighting this horrible disease that took over his body. And I get a call from Mick Maple, his father. I was out in Sacramento, California. Actually, just jumped off of practice. Actually, I ran, and he called me, and it's not like Mick to call me like that, kind of out of the blue. And I could just feel the disconcern in his voice. And he told me, he said, "Cody, I really need your help." And I was like, "What can I do for you, Mick?" And he said, "Maddox, I think we're going to lose Maddox. I think he wants to die. He doesn't want to take his medicine anymore." And my heart kind of just sank, and I was like, "Oh yeah, Okay, what can I do? I'm in California. What's going on?" And he's like, "We know if anyone can get his little heart turned around, it'll be you. He loves you. He looks up to you so much. You've helped him out so much." And in return, I'm thinking in my mind, this little kid has helped me out so much in my life and inspired me and motivated me to become a better person and live life with more purpose and fight with more purpose. So I would do anything for this kid. So I hang up the phone and I'm thinking, what am I going to say to this kid to change his heart, to take his medicine and want to keep, fighting this battle? And I call him.
Important conversation.
Yeah,
man.
Very important. I'm like, I finally, gathered what I was going to say and just, spoke from my heart, honestly. Like, it was, what am I going to say? And I just ended up calling him and getting picked up. And I said, "Maddox, what's going on, buddy?" He's like, "Oh, he's kind of, you could tell he's a little down and out." I was like, "How we doing, man? What's going on?" And he started getting a little smile coming back to himself. And I said, "Hey, listen, I'm just going to be," I was just real raw and real with him about it. I said, "Look, Maddox, if you don't take your medicine," I said, "you're going to die." Point blank. I said, "We promised each other that, we're going to have each other in these fights." I said, who's going to walk me down to my battles? Who's going to walk me down to my cage?" I said, "I need you there." I said, "You're there with me." I said, "I'm here with you in your battle, I said, "I promise you this. You take your chemo and you don't complain," because he was, getting really angry at his parents and was hating them and mad at them for forcing them to take this medicine, so it was a trying time for the family and himself. So you don't complain about taking your medicine. You have 7 months left. You've been doing so well. I promise you that if you beat cancer, I promise you I'll make it to the UFC and I'll take you to every fight with me, every fight with me, and we'll win the world title together." And he's like, "All right, Cody, I'll do that." Hung up the phone. We stayed in contact throughout the last, the 7 months, and saw each other here and there. And August 25th, a little kid called me and said, "Hey, Cody, I kept my end of the promise. It's your turn." And that, like, at a place in my time.
Finished off the last 7 months, right?
Finished off the last 7 months and complained about it. Called me August 25th, his remission date, last dose of chemo. Called me and said, "I kept my promise. Now it's your turn to keep your promise." And where I was at in my life, too, I was not signed to the UFC. I think I was 4-5-0 in the UFC or in the prior as a pro. And I couldn't get a fight. I was trying to get a fight. Uriah was trying to help. I was knocking all these guys out. I'm like, what's going to take to get to the UFC? Finally, I got a fight in my hometown. And the first fight that Uriah came from, he actually flew from Tokyo all the way to Ohio. And he had flip-flops on. I was the middle of winter.
The best.
No jacket.
Like,
he's the best. Just the best guy. I mean, honestly. And it was awesome. So it was my last fight. It was in my close to my hometown. And my fans all there. Maddox was there. And I'm knocking this guy out in the first round. And then Sean Shelby hit me up on Twitter. This was like a couple months after Maddox, you know, told me. So kind of just re-motivated me to like, all right, I got my promise. He did his. Now it's mine.
You got to fulfill your end of the pack.
And I was kind of at a point like, man, what do I got to do to get in the UFC? Got the fight, knocked the guy out. Sean Shelby messaged me on Twitter and said, "Hey, who's your manager?" And I didn't have a manager at the time. I was doing it all myself. My mom would help me sell tickets and book the fights. And, you know, so I call Uriah. I remember meeting him 10 months prior to this, 9 months prior to this, joining the team. And all we did was shake hands and said, "Get to 5-0, I'll get you in the UFC." So that was my fixated number. It was 5-0 to get to the UFC.
That was the goal.
And so I called Uriah and said, "Hey, Sean's calling me, texting me, asking him who my manager is." And I remember we shook hands 10 months ago and he said that you take care of me. He goes, "Okay, awesome." And called his management. They got with me. We ended up squaring away. I get signed in the UFC a couple months after Maddox, you know, took his last dose of chemotherapy. And then we was, you know, fought January 3rd.
So, Cody, do this for me. So you go ahead to UFC 207 and you're facing Dominic Cruz. Mm-hmm. And he's a legend. He hadn't lost for nearly a decade for the bantamweight title. You've got Maddox by your side. It's an amazing fight. It goes to the scorecards as the scores are being read. Knowing everything that you've been through, that Maddox has been through, what's going through your mind?
Going through my mind, I thought I won the fight, you know, pretty easily. I thought, you know, but you never know when it goes to the judges. My coach always said in practice, you put a pace where you can finish the fight any time. You know, you don't want it to go to the judges. You don't want it to go to the scorecards because you don't know. You don't want that have that in their fate. So I'm like sitting there reading the whole time. I'm like, man, I'm waiting for the, you know, the judges to tally it up and Bruce Buffer to come in and Dana and Maddox is there. And I was like, so many thoughts are going through my head. I'm like, man, that was awesome. 25 minutes, just fought one of the best bantamweights. And it was great. It was wonderful. My first title fight. And I'm just like, I know I got this. And then Bruce Buffer announced my name that I won the title. It kind of still didn't register to me until I saw Maddox. He was on the side jumping up and down in the cage with my uncle, who was been my boxing trainer since I was very young. They're both jumping up and down. And like, then it hit me. I saw him. I was just like, man, it's let out this big yell. Like, we did it. You know, it was amazing. So rewarding. The most rewarding night, not only because I won the title fight.
What about that? What means more? Winning the title or honoring the pact and fulfilling the pact?
I think all of it just combined into one. It was such a rewarding night for myself and so many other people. Like Uriah was on the long in the journey. Everyone that I met along this journey, that night was all of ours. It was so rewarding for everybody. Everyone was so happy and just on cloud nine. Maddox finally, you know, I got to give them the world title. And he carried that thing up and down for 2 hours. We had media and press and interviews after. It was awesome. He didn't want to let go of that belt, you know. It was just to see him, I would, you know, we'd be doing media like this.
It was
or
his
interviews.
Too, man. It was his too.
I would look over at him in the corner of the and in the room, and he would be like just looking at this thing, like just beaming. It was the most incredible night.
I think I could probably make an argument that the two of you have done so much for each other. Maybe you saved each other's lives in some way. The fight, let me say, Cody, the fight's coming up. You got a fight coming up this summer. It's August against Dillashaw. We couldn't even get to that fight today because I want to talk about your story and your book. The book is out right now. It's The Pact, a UFC champion, a boy with cancer, and their promise to win the ultimate battle. Cody Garbrandt, my in-studio guest. I know, Cody, a lot of people. Honestly, I've done this a long time, but I've never heard a story quite like this one, but I know this has inspired a lot of people. I'm going to get a lot of reaction to it. If people want to reach out to you on Twitter or they want to know how to get your book, how do they do it?
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Cody_NoLove. You can go to thepackstory.com, and it's out in all retailers and also on Audible. So hopefully they like the book. Give me some feedback on my social media platforms. I'd love to hear from you.
It's a great book. Cody, great job. Really nice to have you in studio. Thanks for the visit. Good luck. And you and I will talk again before the end of summer and before your next fight.
Yes, sir. Bring the
nice
title
job.
Back.
Cody Garbrandt joining me in studio. Your thoughts on that? You know where to find us. You know where to find him on Twitter. All right. We'll take a short time out. We'll come right back. I got a sports update for you right now.
Live from Southern California,
This is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. Nice to have you. My thanks again to Cody Garbrandt, who was in studio. What an amazing story that is. What an amazing story that is. I can remember years and years ago when I first started to talk MMA on the program, a lot of you were like, dude, what is that? Why are you doing that? Or as one guy famously said as a caller, Rome, man, it's disgusting. Quote, it's just a couple of dudes humping each other. Strong take. Very progressive thought. All right, listen, I understand the sport itself is not for a lot of people. It's not for everybody. Myself, I grew up on boxing. I'm still a huge boxing fan, but I've always been fascinated by MMA. It's a very different kind of sport, different disciplines, different guys. But I was into it, one, because I love the sport, but two, I love the guys in the sport. I love the stories in the sport, and that's another example of that. Cody Garbrandt is a great, great story, really strong. In fact, there's almost no way to do justice to that story in one single segment. If ever there was a podcast that had podcasts written all over it, I mean, we couldn't even really get into what it was like for him to grow up in the town that he grew up in because the story of him and Maddox was so amazing. But, I mean, he kind of glossed over the fact that he got stabbed in a bar fight and was going down the wrong road and could have ended up working in a coal mine. And until he met this child with leukemia, his life was really going the wrong way. And that literally, as I said, I think they both saved each other's lives. Here's some of the reaction. First on Twitter, at Daniel Wolf tweets, Romy, I am not a UFC honk, but these are the interviews that make your show. What an inspiring story. Hashtag the pact. Hashtag Team Max. Chris and KC tweets, it's one thing to respect a fighter like at Cody No Love for accomplishments in the ring. It's rare to respect them for what they do outside of it. Hashtag powerful. Hashtag respect. Mike from Green Bay tweets, I'm literally sitting in my truck to listen to the rest of this interview. It's always good when you can't leave your car because you have to hear the end of the interview. At 20 Peace tweets, I'm not crying. You're crying. And an email. Rome, glad you were able to have that Cody Garbrandt interview in the studio today. It just goes to show that for all the talk about the UFC being untenable, guys like Cody come in and completely change the narrative. He even looks out for his fellow fighters like Uriah Faber by keeping involved in the industry. It's not easy, but this is how you build the brand into something legitimate. From getting stabbed in a bar fight to leveraging his UFC stardom into helping a sick child, this guy is going places. So, while the weenies were out there making up excuses for Matt Patricia and sharing pictures of Tom Brady looking like a trick shot billiards player, guys like Cody are telling a much more compelling story about what it is to keep your word like a man. Sincerely, cornhole fist fights. Variable tint sunglasses. Asking a bill collector to trust the process. Glass pack mufflers. And telling your Tinder date, the doctor said it's only temporary. War CrossFit gym owners going to the junkyard to look for business equipment. War equalizers in bantamweight UFC fights. Joaquin, you freaking went there. I can't believe you, dude. We do an in-studio interview with Cody Garbrandt about his relationship with a child who has leukemia. This child has given up on life. The father calls Cody and says, I think we're going to lose him. He doesn't want to take his meds anymore. He's given up. Cody picks up the phone, has real talk with the youngster and says, you're going to die if you don't do this. Take your meds. Stay in the fight. Continue to battle. I need you. I need you to come to my fights. You do that, and then I will give you everything I have, and you can come to every one of my fights, and I'll win a world championship. It's like The best story ever. The best story ever. And there you are, Joaquin. One of the best emailers ever. Come on, Joaquin. You might want to rethink that one. Sincerely, cornhole fistfights. Asking a bill collector to trust the process. And telling your Tinder date, the doctor said it's only temporary. Well, Joaquin, I got to give it to you, man. Like I always say, I thought that that well would have run dry a long time ago. It's amazing that guy still has a war left in him. Every time there's a UFC or MMA interview on this show, that guy comes with an email similar to that. And I keep thinking he's going to run out of material, and he never does. Never. Hit me up. Mike Gundy's coming up at the top of the hour, but I've got time for a phone call right now. I could slide somebody in right now for the right call. 1-800-636-8686. Follow me on Twitter at Jim Rome. You can email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. Go to my Facebook page. Go to my Instagram page. Whatever you want, find a way to go there. Let's talk. Let's talk about anything you want. Now, Boston, Philadelphia, that series is over. The big question, once it ended, was who would be the very first to jump up at the podium for Boston? Because there were a lot of guys with podium games. Jason Tatum, 25. Jaylen Brown, 24 points. Terry Rozier, 17 points, 6 boards. Al Horford had 15 points, 8 rebounds, 5 steals. And that monster alley-oop. Marcus Smart, just doing Marcus Smart things. Or do you give it to Brad Stevens? Do you give it to Brad Stevens? No, 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 and no to all the above. The first guy on the Celtics podium was none other than my man, Drew Bledsoe.
The scary Terry, Terry wrote the Terry Rose may be the thing. So, you know, watch out. I'm going to have to talk to him. We'll bring him out to Washington. We're going to develop a profile.
Terry Rose. My man Drew Bledsoe has become like a master winemaker, so he wants to drop a Terry Rose. Hell to the yes. Hell to the yes. The saltiness continues. That's nearly as spicy as the Garden DJ playing Summertime as the 76ers left the court after the loss. I like it. I like it a lot. This series ended only a few hours ago, and I already miss it a lot. I mean, sure, Boston-Cleveland has got the potential to be a great series. Houston-Golden State's the one series we've been waiting for all year long. But Boston-Philly was the one that I didn't know that I needed, the one that I didn't know that I was all about until it happened. I mean, let's be real. Would anybody have been surprised if Boston lost in the first round? I didn't see this coming. Then again, I'm just a dude who does a nationally syndicated radio program that is simulcast on TV and does a weekly podcast. I'm just minding my own business, staying in my own lane. When these two come along and start punching each other in the face, and then I couldn't get enough. I could not take my eyes off it. It was nothing I expected, but everything I ever wanted. There was Terry Rozier, or Terry Rose, showing up for game one in a Drew Bledsoe jersey to humiliate Eric Bledsoe. Then there was Rozier showing up on the court like this.
Rozier moving it. Rozier sidestep. Edison. Wow.
He did that, and then he did this.
Redick in the corner. No. Rozier the rebound. Speed dribble, leaving it up. Tatum throws it down.
I mean, this series had everything. Everything. It had Joel Embiid doing things like this.
By Boston. Now Simmons in transition. What a pass to Embiid, by goodness!
So you have Terry Rozier doing Terry Rozier things. You have Joel Embiid doing Joel Embiid things. And then you have Rozier and Embiid doing this.
And now Rozier called for a foul on the push off. And Rozier and Embiid come together. Rozier threw a shot into Embiid's chest.
I like it. It's not just the games either. The games were good. The post-game pressers, even better. I'm going to miss all of that. And I need a little more time to finish that thought. But I've got to get out to end hour number one. We start hour number two by talking to Mike Gundy, Oklahoma State head football coach. He joins me in 10 minutes. Do not go anywhere. And I will have time for your telephone calls. Hey, don't forget. I mean, you got out so quickly. You started off so well. It's still a smack-off season. July 20th. You need to play your way in. You cannot call on the biggest day of the year unless you have an invite. 1-800-636-8686. Mike Gundy joins us next.